Jesus replied, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me."
I am fortunate enough to be able to be part of that class back there on Wednesday evenings, and it's been a song and study class. And sometime back, the elders asked the group if they could begin learning some of the songs in our song book. There are really a lot of the songs in our book that we don't know and don't regularly sing here in our assembly. And they asked if we could maybe learn a few of those and then begin introducing them to expand our repertoire of songs. And Reuben James has been the one who has really, he was the one who went to the elders and asked about this. And he is leading us in that class, helping us learn more of these. And I'm excited about this. And I love a lot of the older songs. I love some of the newer songs. There are many of the older songs in the book that we simply don't know either, as well as the new ones. So hopefully we'll see some improvement in this area. And Reuben, we appreciate you leading us in those songs tonight. If you've got your Bibles, let me invite you to open to John chapter 12. We're nearing the end of our study. This morning we were in John chapter 15. We're down to the very end of the ministry of Christ, the days that led up to His crucifixion. And we've already gone way over. I intended to preach through John in the first quarter and just could not make it fit. And even now we're having to leapfrog over some great sections. And I wanted to go back and not miss this one section because it is so crucial to what Jesus was about and what we're to be about. So I'm actually backtracking tonight just to pick up a section here that we have missed as we've gone through the Gospel of John. And it's the passage that was read for you at the beginning. In the opening scene of Macbeth, Shakespeare wrote these words, "If you can look into the seed of time and say, which grain will grow and which will not, speak then to me." In modern parlance, he was simply saying, if you can tell the future, I want to hear from you. If you can look into the future and tell me what's going to happen, who will grow and who will go this direction and who will go that, then come talk to me because I want to know such things. Jesus here spoke of His coming glorification. He spoke about the future events that would shortly take place in His own ministry. And then He calls upon all who would follow Him to follow the same path. And it's a surprising path. Jesus was headed toward His death, and He says to His followers, "You've got to die too if you want to be my follower." Listen again to the words. Let's look there. In fact, back up to verse 20 here in chapter 12. It says, "There were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the feast. And they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. 'Sir,' they said, 'we would like to see Jesus.' Philip went to tell Andrew, and Andrew and Philip in turn told Jesus." And so Jesus replies, and this is His answer. He's talking about the end being near, and He says, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. Now my heart is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No. It was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify Your name." As we take on the role of following Jesus, we need to be crystal clear that we have counted the cost. And Jesus advises any who would follow Him to count the cost, because following Jesus Christ is going to require the death of the follower. Death to self. And I want to explain what that means. When Jesus here is asked, they come to Him saying there's some that want to talk to Him. He begins immediately talking about the end. And he uses that phrase that he's used so often before. He talks about his hour. Now, always before, as you read in John's Gospel and the other Gospels, when people tried to take him and make him king by force, he would say, "My hour is not yet come." Frequently he would use that phrase, "My hour is not yet come." And now, finally, as he nears the end, he says, "My hour has come. This is the reason that I have come." And he talks about his hour, and he says there, it's time for the Son of Man to be glorified. Now, if you had been one of those followers that had stuck with him through those 3 years of his ministry, to hear him finally say this would have absolutely thrilled your heart, because you had been waiting for him to finally bring in this kingdom that he'd been talking about. You would have been so excited because the enemies of Jesus had grown and the plots against his life had grown. And now to hear him finally, at long last, say, "The time's come. I'm about to be glorified." You would have expected to see him crowned king and to, with power, take on these Romans and these enemies and step into his role of kingship. And yet, paradoxically, having talked about his time of glory coming, his hour having arrived, look what he says. It's time, he says, for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only... He starts talking about death. Now, Peter earlier had chastised Jesus because he started talking about death. And Jesus turned and said, "Get behind me, Satan. You don't understand my reason. You don't understand my hour." So he starts again talking about death here. Now, that's not what a general talks to his troops about on the eve of battle. That's not what a coach talks to the team about just before the big game. You don't talk about losing and dying and all these kinds of words. Those are not the vocabulary that you want to use. But Jesus, using the image of a wheat seed, begins to speak of his need to die. Now, most of us understand about seeds. We're not as tied to the land as these people were who heard this, but I think most of you in science class or in your own garden in the backyard, if you didn't grow up on a farm, you understand the principle of seeds and how they grow. And Jesus talks specifically about a wheat seed. And a kernel of wheat is designed to die. The very design that Jesus put into it, that God put into it at creation, is a design that accommodates death. The shape of the seed, it only requires a little bit of moisture, that little elongated kernel, a little bit of moisture on that, and it begins to crack open. And that little tiny root shoot will start going down, and that little slender plant stalk will begin shooting up. And that's the design that God built into a kernel of wheat. Listen again what Jesus says about it in verse 24. "I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." What good is a single kernel of wheat? I mean, it's tiny, little bitty thing. Some of you have picked wheat out in the field. You've seen those golden heads bending in the sun. And if you get them and rub them, you can eat them. You can grind them and make flour. But have you ever just looked at one little kernel of wheat? How much hunger could that satisfy? Why, it'd be silly to even try to grind a single kernel of wheat. Even a mouse could not be satisfied if he had a single kernel of wheat for his daily rations. A single kernel of wheat is absolutely useless. There's no good at all. But if you take that tiny little single kernel of wheat and plant it, an incredible thing happens. It begins to grow. And it'll produce a whole head of those kernels. And you take those and multiply them by planting them, letting them die, and you've got a whole field full of wheat that can feed a large group of people and do it very well. Now, Jesus explains that that's the purpose behind a kernel of wheat. I've always been amazed. I've never grown wheat, but I've grown corn. And when we lived in Memphis, we had a big garden in our backyard, and we put up the bean poles, and we grew those Kentucky wonder beans and watched them just spiral up those poles and the big orange blossoms that came on them. But the most amazing plant of all is corn. And we would take just a couple of those little kernels of corn and put it in a hole, and up that plant would come. And so you get so much for so little of an investment with corn. It's really amazing. I came across an article recently in which a fellow was talking about corn, and he went out in the country and he was talking to a farmer, and he had never been around corn, and he asked the farmer how many grains of corn one usually got from each grain that was planted. And he said the farmer had an ear of corn right there, and he just shucked it off and handed it to him, and he says, count the number of rows on this ear. And he said he counted it, and there were 14 rows of kernels on that particular ear. And he had him just count one of the rows to see how many kernels were on the row. And he counted, and there were 50 grains on that row. Now, if you multiply 14 times 50, you'll come up with 700. And the farmer said, every once in a while, in fact, you know, with the right kind of corn, you'll get two ears to a stalk. And you look at the return. You plant one little kernel of corn, and in return, you get 700, maybe 1,400 kernels of corn. And that doesn't even count the good of the stalk of corn for silage or for fodder for the cattle. So all this return from that one infinitesimal little investment, but in order for that to happen, that one seed has to be willing to die. It's got to go in the ground. It's got to be moistened. It's got to break open. It's got to lose its identity, and it's got to be changed into a form that is radically different from the little yellow kernel that went in the ground. The same thing's true of wheat. I'm just not as familiar with wheat as some of you may be, but the same principle is true there. And Jesus lived in a region where everybody knew about wheat, and so he uses wheat as an example. Wheat seed is designed to die. And Jesus says the same thing about himself. He was designed to die. He came into this world for the purpose of giving his life and of dying. In verse 27, notice what he says, now my heart is troubled. And what shall I say? He says, should I pray to God and say, God, save me from this hour? No. It was for this reason that I came to this hour. He says, that's why I entered this world. I came here to die so that God would be glorified. So God, get on with the business and glorify your name through my death. And you know, Jesus says to us, if you want to be my follower, you must also be willing to die. I don't know if we understand what it means to die to self. What do you think it means? Have you died to yourself this week? Do you make it a habit as a Christian to die to self as part of your following of Jesus Christ? Let me just read this definition. I think it's a great definition of what it means to die to self. When you're forgotten or neglected or purposely set at naught, and you don't sting or hurt with the insult of the oversight, but your heart is happy, being counted worthy to suffer for Christ, that's dying to self. When your good is evil spoken of, and when your wishes are crossed, and your advice is disregarded, and your opinions ridiculed, and you refuse to let anger rise in your heart, or even to defend yourself, but take it all in patient, loving silence, that is dying to self. When you're content with any food, any offering, any clothing, any climate, any society, any solitude, any interruption by the will of God, that is dying to self. When you no longer care to hear yourself in conversation or to record your own good works or to itch after commendation, when you can truly love to be unknown, that's dying to self. And when you can receive correction and reproof from one of less stature than yourself and can humbly submit, inwardly as well as outwardly, finding no rebellion or resentment rising within your heart, that is dying to self. You know, the opposite of dying to self is egotism, self-promotion, big-headedness, self-centeredness. This egotism has been described as a disease that makes everybody sick except the one who has it. And that's true. Now, Jesus says three things to us, and I want to leave you with these three things tonight. Three things for anyone who claims to want to follow Him. Do you really? Do you understand what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ? He says, only by death is it possible to truly live. Now, these things seem to be turning reality on their head, but so often Jesus used these figures of speech. The last shall be first, the first shall be last. And he says here, the only way you're ever going to really live is to be willing to die. Now, we all live for something. It's impossible to go through life without goals, and you'll either set goals for yourself or somebody else will set goals for you. We all have goals like this. And the question is simply this: what is your consuming passion? What do you think about in your free moments when you just can daydream? What do you talk about with your friends? What really excites you? What are you planning for? Is it family? Is it financial security? Is it your career? Is it your hobby? Is it your sport? Is it your own glorification or your honor or your power? Let me tell you, if it's any of these things, those are all the things that Jesus calls self. And sooner or later, those who serve self are left with a bad taste in their mouth. Somehow, it never, ever satisfies. And many a man and many a woman have come to the end of their life, and they, near the end, feeling hollow and empty, admitting in their heart of hearts that they have never really lived, that somehow they've missed out on what other people have called the real stuff of life. And they acknowledge that they were really never happy chasing after all these dreams. Because you see, there's only one way to really, truly live. And that is doing it the way Jesus said, being willing to die to yourself. Let God do whatever He will with me. If I die in obscurity, I'm going to die His. If I die empty-handed, I'm going to die His. I will die to myself, to my own aspirations, and I will live for Him and for Him alone. That's dying to self. You know, you can't do that partially. It's not like just pruning a few limbs on a tree. It means taking the axe to the root. Jesus says that only by spending our life can we hold on to it. We used to sing a song when I was a kid in the youth group. Love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more. You know, the man who loves his life is basically motivated by two things: by his own agenda, and that's called selfishness, and by safety, and that's the desire for security. I want to build all these walls around myself that will keep me safe, so that if I have a health problem, I can take care of that. And if I have a money problem, I can take care of that. And so I'll insure this and I'll insure that. And I'll build this safety net to keep me safe. Jesus told about a man that did that, and He called him a rich fool. And after he'd built all of his safety nets and had his barn and all of his goods laid by, that very night, God said, it's over. You thought you were safe, but you're not. Tonight, you lose your life. Now, spending our life always involves risk. And if we're to die to self, it's a risky venture. What happens if I put a seed out there and a bird comes and gets it? You know, I better hold on to this seed because it might not grow into a plant. Or what if I put it out there and there's a drought? Or what if I plant it and we get too much rain and it rots in the ground? You know, there are all kinds of risks for seeds. But Jesus asked us to lay it on the line and to take the risk and to take it for Him. And when we do that, He promises a reward. Now, you can't guarantee that if you even plant a kernel of corn or a kernel of wheat. But if you plant your own life and you die to self, Jesus promises a wonderful, bountiful return. Look what He says in verse 26. He says there, whoever serves Me must follow Me, and where I am, My servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves Me. If you give your life and it seems like it's for naught, if you die to yourself and you are never commended or honored or noticed, God will notice. And God will honor, and fruit will be born from a life that dies and lives for Jesus Christ. Greatness comes through service. You know, in some ways, it's a relief to be able to relinquish control of my life and stop this mad pursuit of all the things that I want to do for self. To die to self and to become a servant and to serve my Master, seeking not my glory but His glory. Anything I can do to serve Jesus Christ and make Him look good, that's what I'll do from now on as I die to my own self. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, Paul wrote, I've been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless I live, it's not I, but Christ that liveth in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith. The Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. So I want to ask you this question. Are you a Christian? I mean, are you really a follower of Jesus Christ? If you are, I want to ask you the next question. Are you dead yet? Have you died to self? Do you live for Him? You see, when you die to self, you die to sin. You die to self-glorification. You die to your own agenda. And it changes everything. It changes our patience level. It changes our frustration level when we're interrupted. Because if I give Monday morning to Jesus Christ and I tell Him, You use me in whatever way You see fit. Now, I'm planning to go to Sam's and get some things, and I'm going to take the car by and get some work. I've got all the... But God, You interrupt those plans if You need to. And if You need to put me in contact with someone and the phone rings, I'll not be frustrated by that. I'll understand that You're using me to glorify You. And it changes my whole outlook on life. And I look forward to the opportunities that God will bring my way. And if you present yourself as a useful tool of His in that way, I can promise you He will use you. And He will be the one who gets the glory. I hope that we can all honestly say that we have died to self and that we're living for Him as we begin this new week. If you've never died to self, I want to encourage you tonight to make that death known in a visible, very practical way. Jesus asked us to die to ourselves as we submit to Him in the waters of baptism, to rise, to live a new life, having been born again. The old man's dead. There's a new creation that has come. If you need to take that step, we want to encourage you to do that. If you need the prayers of God's people for any reason, as you struggle to once again crucify that old man that wants to keep rising up, we'll pray for you and help you in that battle. If you need to come, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?